Blog Talk Radio.
All right, out there, guys and girls, gun mold and demons, let's stand up, because now we have on the air with us today, from an unknown location within the suburbs of New York, we have the most beautiful, lovely, talented writer, who is not only the greatest writer of guys ever put on this earth, whoever told himself, but is such a good cook that women go screaming down the streets when she realizes that she's in the kitchen cooking up another great meal that they have to try to compare with. I give you none other than the beautiful, the vivacious, and the really coolly talented, greatly great person whose name I'll now destroy, Murata. I really messed up that name. Now I'm going to get that hit. How you doing? How are you doing today?
Hi. Hi, thanks for having me. And for all of you listening out there, it's my author name is PC Murata, that you know me by. So you can go ahead and call me PC or Patrice.
Outstanding, PC. I'll go with PC. I will indeed. So how did this book come about?
Well, this book actually came about. It's a follow-up to my small memoir cookbook that broke out in 2012 and is now revised. I paid homage to Williamsburg, Brooklyn, and this book actually came about as just beyond my wildest expectations, thanks to 8 extraordinary people that contributed their once-in-a-lifetime stories. And Williamsburg, Brooklyn, you know, people ask why. Williamsburg, Brooklyn also pays homage to every neighborhood in America that immigrants came to on the shores of America in the late 19th century, early 20th century. Many of the immigrants that came from Europe came to the shores of the United States and settled on the eastern seaboard. And that's what they brought with them, their cultures, their stories, their memories. And as we move forward in every generation that we're in now and towards our future, we have to really look back, because being able to look back at our history, our ancestral history in time, really pushes us forward and enables us to move forward. Every new generation brings something new to the table, but we should never, ever, ever forget their struggles and what they have given us in our history.
You're so right when you say that, because we are our past. And I think that a culture who loses that identity of their past is, if I may use the word, a weaker one, because I myself reach back and I illustrate to my kids and my grandchildren how our family's past influences us today. I can't believe that's not true in every immigrant society.
Exactly, exactly. And that holds true for any culture. Every culture that has come to America in that time frame. You know, Williamsburg didn't start with the Italians. It was first settled by German, and then the Jews, and then the influx of different cultures. So it was always a multicultural neighborhood from the beginning. And I write about the Italian immigration because obviously my family settled there in 1898, and we have a long history. And the people that contributed, one name comes to mind, Ben DiCarlo, 90 years old. His story is extraordinary, once in a lifetime. He writes about living in Williamsburg as a firefighter and his childhood in 1927. Famed organized crime historian Chris Cipollini, and yes, it's called Cipollini, not Cipollini. he is foremost, and I mean foremost, expert in his field in the birth of the American mafia in this country. And you want to know something, the true facts about it? You need to go look at his writings and ask him. He's amazing.
Very much so. I have the honor of being his friend. He's been on the show once. We have a couple of projects ongoing. This goes to show the greatness of this country and the greatness we are, in my opinion, we're only greater when we have immigration. You know, we're only greater when we have a welcoming policy. Those people want to come here and make the best effort to try to make themselves better. We become a better country because of it.
Yes, and you have to remember, and your listeners also have to remember and look at the history. When these people came to the shores of America back then, there was no welfare, no social security, no government help. They came with maybe a suitcase and family in tow. My great-grandfather came twice. He came to actually find work, because many of the Italians back in Italy at that time were in agriculture. They were farmers. That's the big product in Italy. Their agriculture. We get the Italian food, the products, tomatoes, artichokes, anchovies. And so when they came here, well, the eastern coast, there was very little farms. They settled in the big cities where they had to learn new trades.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a struggle, and they lived in tenement houses, or which they were called cold flats. So it wasn't easy, and we need to remember and pay homage to that, because it's because of their struggles we are able to live the free and luxurious life we live today.
I cannot agree with you more, ma'am. I think it's a fascinating service and a fascinating time period of this country. And think that we can celebrate so much of it with food. And I'm a big eater, trust me. If you ever get to see me, you know that. And each culture has its own unique food dishes, too, that we freely share back and forth.
Yes, and I don't really know anyone who doesn't like Italian food, and I'm sure there are people out there, and that's okay, too. We can't always like everything the same. That's what makes us unique. But Italian food, also a note on that, has been Americanized. Many of the dishes that were passed down, as I write about in the recipes in my first book, they are authentic Italian dishes, or as my father always called them, depression dishes. And it's not because it makes you depressed. On the contrary, it means it was the time, the era of the Great Depression, and they had no jobs and no money. And the women, of course, at that time, stayed home. Women did not work. They raised their families. And it meant many of the immigrant families were large families with a lot of children. So they had to put a nutritious meal on the table, but also something affordable. So what I call them today also is one-pot meals. And that's like zucchini stufati, a zucchini stew, pasta fagioli, which is actually pasta and bean soup. So we've, over the time period of generations, as you know now with our cooking shows and the superstars and the network TV shows, we've changed a lot of the authentic, simple meals that were brought to our shores by the Italians.
And as what I'm fascinated too by is, I, like you, don't know too many people that don't like Italian food, but I see food as a way to open doors. Because growing up, I grew up in a small, very, very small community. And the way that we welcomed a new neighbor is that people would come by with dishes. You know, and you make friends over your supper. You make friends at lunch. You know, here, you know, John's came home from work today. Here's the new neighbor, Henry. And, oh, now we're going to have whatever it is we're going to have. And now they're going to come over here. They're going to bring their kids. And the kids get to know each other, right? That's how you build community. And you do it over food. I think it's absolutely wonderful.
Yes. And the great American pastime, you know, I write about it in the book. Sitting on the stoop on a warm summer night. Many a night in the summer, my father would tell the stories of how my grandparents, their neighbors, their friends, the people in the neighborhood knew each other. It was all an extended family. So yep. You couldn't walk down the block without saying hi and maybe spending a half hour, 45 minutes talking with someone. The women would come down with coffee and some homemade baked goods. And everyone would sit, and that's how they would pass the time. You know, that was for everyone born in this generation, well before cell phones and computers and even telephone. My father grew up without a phone.
Yeah, I hear that. Yeah. You know, you take phones away from my grandkids, I think they have a stroke. Yeah, it's wild. It's wild. But, I mean, society changes. I mean, technology is going to change some society. This is true. And it's nice to know that some traditions still remain here. I live in Racine, which we discussed off air. Is it the safest, most friendliest places anymore? But I find it's always interesting that when we have a new, and the turnover in my neighbors is huge because it's all the rental properties that we have. But when we have new neighbors come in and I show up with a six pack of beer, or I get my wife to make something as a welcoming present to them, you know, you have that instant rapport. They want to become your friend. So, and that, most importantly, they'll keep that eye out. When you're at home, somebody they don't recognize is near your home, they'll find out what's going on and help protect your property, which I think is hugely huge.
Yes, yes. And we do. We need each other. I mean, people are social beings. We're not meant to live alone in a cave somewhere. And gathering around the table goes back to the beginning of human existence, not around a table, of course, but just the sharing of a meal and the conversation and making friends. I mean, we were never allowed to sit without my father sitting first or my grandfather sitting first at the table. And that also goes back to respect for your elders, respect
right.
for the family, respect for your parents. So that's
right.
what this book is about. It's paying homage. It has stories within stories, once in a
oh, wow.
lifetime, never before. And it's really about history and a neighborhood so few people really know about.
Wow, that sounds like an incredible. I have to ask this question. By the tone of your voice, the way that you talk about your book, this seems to me a very, very moving experience for you. Did you find it to be so? Was it something that you really enjoyed doing?
Yes, yes.
Okay.
Writing, well, most of my family on my father's side, they're mostly gone now, and my mom's
awesome.
Family. So to sit back and listen to my father tell the stories from day one and to put all this together in a book was extremely emotional at some parts because I remember walking down the street. It's sort of like walking with ghosts. You're going back in time, and I tell people the book is a journey. It takes you back in time from the 1600s when the Dutch West India Company first chartered and purchased the land. And then it takes you back to the immigration period when they came here looking for a better life. And then some of the contributors were gracious enough to also contribute some of their recipes.
Oh,
so
wow.
it's just amazing. And Mr. Cipollini contributed an entire chapter called The Ghosts of Gangland Williamsburg. And that's about
oh, wow.
the mafia in Williamsburg. Many people don't realize. John Sirico, a journalist who also contributed to the book, wrote about and interviewed Mr. Cipollini, wrote about mafia and the pastry shops and Williamsburg as it was and as it is today. So it's an interesting read, and it's definitely a lesson learned.
Wow. Can you share with us one of the more interesting stories you found that you were not aware of before you wrote the book?
You mean from one of the contributors, or
right, or research that you've done and didn't know before you started the research of the book, ma'am? Yes, ma'am.
Well, I always go back to, my father contributed his story because basically my family has a long history, over 100 years in Williamsburg. And yeah, it goes deep. But for some reason, what touched me emotionally was Ben DiCarlo. He contributed, like I said before, he contributed 7 pages of his life to me. And he is, on my father's side, a distant cousin. And I just thought it was the most special story that I read. And I hope it touches everyone's heart equally as it did mine. Because 90 years old, to contribute his life like this is, you can't touch that. You can't. You can't make that up.
No, no, you can't. You know, and again, as I said earlier, I think when we start losing our connection to our family and our histories, I think we become lesser people because I can't trace mine that far. I only know the stories that my father has told me, my mom, both now deceased, have told me. Yeah, so I can only go by verbal stories probably back to maybe the 20s, if I'm lucky.
Mm-hmm.
Anything else we found out is from documentation, and some of that documentation is sketchy, to say the least. You know, that verbal history is hugely important.
Well, I have to say, I traced my great-grandfather's steps through Ancestry.com. And I have to say, I'm not plugging them as a commercial, but anyone who is looking further for their ancestral history really should use that tool because it's invaluable. I saw the manifest of the boat he got off of. He came twice. I mean, it's all there. Anyone could probably go back, even back to Europe, if the records are there, if you know, it goes back that far. It's a bit of a research, but it's a wonderful thing to experience because you're looking at yourself in a mirror. You're saying, okay, my family came. These are his steps. This is the path they took.
Mm-hmm. Yes. It's always interesting path how we got here. I mean, from my understanding, again, from research, which we think is sketchy, my family came from Scotland and Ireland and immediately ran into the hills where we became hillbillies, of all things. But that's how things happen. Now, tell me, where can we find you online?
Oh, of course. You can go directly to my website, and that's PCMarotta, that's PCMarotta.com. You can follow me on Twitter, as you know.
Yep.
Look up PC Marotta. I'm pretty much on all of social media, and I'd be more than happy to, you know, answer questions, talk with anybody who wants to ask me about the book, ask me about Williamsburg.
Right. Now, I have to ask you that. Do you sell your book through your webpage, or do you find it on Amazon, or how do you get your book?
You can find it anywhere. My book is sold worldwide. It was just released about two, three weeks ago. And, you know, fingers crossed, it's doing well. So I'm on Amazon. You can get it through my shop, wherever you feel more comfortable buying it. And it's also on ebooks. You can get it on Kindle if you belong to Kindle Unlimited. I believe it's free.
Okay, that's wonderful. I will have to tell all of my friends. And I'd like to thank you for coming on my show to do this. Not that we're not done with the show by any means, but I want to make sure I thank you for allowing me to be one of the first people to interview you about your book and what you're doing with it. I think it's very special, and I appreciate that a great deal.
Well, thank you so much. I am honored to be here, and I am so happy to be here. Before we perhaps take questions or go further, I just wanted to thank publicly the extraordinary individuals, the eight of them. If they're listening, you're in my heart, and you will forever be my friend. I want to thank Ben DiCarlo. I know he's not listening, but I know his nieces, Lydia DiCarlo Cardellano, Nicholas Cardellano, Louise DiPola, Christian Cipollini, Joanne D'Arazio, Patricia Tufano Kelly, and John Serico. They all have amazing stories that you just can't make it up, and it's never been done before. So thank you from the bottom of my heart.
Wow, yes, they're amazing people, very amazing people. Next question is, I can't help but think that this is more in store because of this book. Do you have any other plans to use this book as a launching stepping stone to anything else?
Yes. Yes, I am actively hoping, and I'll get there. I'm driven. I do nothing conventional, those that know me. We are hoping to have it either as a movie someday on the big screen, a documentary, a TV series, or a television show, but probably a series or a documentary. It's that good, and I'm not being biased because I am my worst critic. It is that extraordinary, and people would find it very interesting because you have everything for everyone. You have the emotion, you have the romantic side, you have the historical side, and you have crime. People that like that edgy crime drama, you have that, thanks to Mr. Cipollini. So you have everything in one book. And
well,
it's a good read, and I just hope that they read it first, and, you know, I'm open to all suggestions.
I can't help but think that any size of a food company's be it, you know, condiments to restaurants wouldn't be champing at the bit to be a sponsor of that show. A great way to get an appreciative audience in front of, the, you know, them as an advertiser, a sponsor, to help bring their fans good content that everybody wants to see. I mean, I want to see good content.
I'll give you a little bit of information, just a little. Back in 2012 when my first book came out, I was in Chicago then, and I was offered Barilla wanted to sponsor me. I still have their letter. They were awesome. By the way, it's an awesome company. And they were going to sponsor me for my own cooking show. But at time, it wasn't the right time, the right fit with the right people. So, and it was good. Things happened for a reason. Then I launched my series of children's books. So it's still out there. It's still waiting. Things are waiting. Good things are going to come for everyone.
Absolutely. I feel that is very, very, very much the case for you especially. I did not know you wrote children's books. Can you briefly touch on them, please?
Yes. Just briefly, my illustrator, who I love dearly, A.L. Houghton, is in England. And she is the ones who make Twinkle and Friends come to life. I wanted to have a different educational but fun children's book. And Twinkle and Friends is based on the characters post-Peanuts, you know, post-Peanuts era, the little gang of dogs.
Yeah.
They are all real-life dogs. Based on my dogs and her dog, and we brought them to life in adventures, in children's books. And the educational part of it is every single book touches on a life lesson for a child. For instance, Road Rage Willie is about a little Pekingese riding a motorcycle, and it's about bullying. Willie teaches kids it's okay to say no to bullies, and bullying is one of my subjects that I have a pet peeve about because bullying can kill, and it needs to be stopped, and children should not be afraid to stand up and tell an adult and reach out for help. So each one of the books talks about family, bullying, the environment, and you can find them on my website as well.
Outstanding. Outstanding. I have grandkids. I know it's a perfect gift for them. Very much so. Well, ma'am, the little English lady has told me that it's time to wind down the show. I apologize it's so short, but hopefully things will come on. It'll be better in the future. We can expand it. You always also have you back. You have an open invitation to come on the show and spend more time with us and the boys in the Milwaukee Mob. Can we have your location one more time online that we can find you in case people didn't get the information down the first time?
Yes. You can find me through my website at pcmarotta, that's MARROTTA.com, and you can look me up, PC Marotta Author, on Facebook, follow my page, I'm on Twitter and LinkedIn.
Glad to
reach out, love talking with people, answer any questions you may have.
Well, thank you so much, ma'am. Once again, it's been a wonderful wonderful time talking to you. I know I'll be in contact in the future. And you do know that the boys of the Milwaukee Mob have demanded that I make you one of the VIPs to the Mob Party that we're offering up in October. And at least, if all else, we can go and steal some recipes from you.
Thank you so much. I am honored, really. And I am honored to be part of the Milwaukee Mob. Hey, you know what? Our neighborhoods were a lot safer when the mob ran them.
One of the safest places in the city of Racine, in the middle of the worst neighborhood, is an Italian restaurant with rumors from the time I moved here in 85 that they're connected, right? Your cars aren't broken in the parking lot. The drug dealers, the panhandlers, stay off that property like it's the plague. And I don't know if it's true or it's not. I can only tell you that it's the safest place. One of the few places I'll take my wife to at night in the city of Racine. Because I know that within that parking lot, that restaurant, the black around it, I could leave my wallet out on the floor, and when I came back, it would still be there.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But I want to thank you again. It's been an honor and a pleasure, and I would love to come back and chat.
I'll send you. I have to bring you and Chris in at the same time. That'd be fun. All right.
That would be a lot of fun. Idea. Chris, if you're listening.
That'd actually be a good idea. Actually, wonderful idea. All right, ma'am, again, thank you very much for your time. I really appreciate it. And with that, we'll talk to you soon, ma'am. Thanks again.
Thank you. Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye. What a beautiful guest. I apologize. I batched your name up so badly when the show opened. I do. I also apologize that these shows go so short. Yes, I bought a new editing program to learn so I don't have to necessarily use Block Talk Radio. Haven't learned it yet. Takes time. Things go on. And sound editing is way different than film editing. Way different. Anyway, it is what it is. You can find me on Twitter at the Milwaukee Mob. We also have a Facebook group. You can simply say Milwaukee Mob. It will find me if you're into Facebook. And again, my Twitter would be at the Milwaukee Mob. And we'll be doing three shows talking more about the Mob Party. A lot of interesting things developing in the month of October. And some other cool things going on, too. And again, I'd like to thank my guest today, the beautiful, the talented, the so amazingly amazing, MC Marotta, for being on the show. I appreciate Chris for helping make this show happen. He's a wonderful human being, and he is one of the bestest people I've ever had the pleasure to meet. With that, everything else, have a great day. Talk to you all soon. Bye-bye.